Welcome everybody, this is Cocktail Mode, the podcast where me and my co-host Dave, say hello Dave.
Hello.
Pick a classic video game and try and pair it with a cocktail. This week's is Flashback from Delphine. We're going to talk about the sequels, the abandoned ports, Prince of Persia. I'd be amazed if Tomb Raider doesn't show up.
Another world is in there somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah, we have a bit of that as well. So yeah, and we're going to talk about all those great things, and then we're going to try and find a cocktail to match it up with. So stay tuned.
For the SNES version, they made a few changes to things. SNES port features some minor censorship due to Nintendo's content guidelines at the time.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
Changes included New Washington's Bar becoming a cafe.
Oh.
And Death Tower being renamed Cyber Tower.
Yes.
While the enemy mutants who had natural skin colours in other versions were recoloured green.
Wow.
Which I don't remember at all. I'm trying to think back to what I first played on. I think it's probably the Amiga, but it might have been the Mega Drive.
Well, I had it on the SNES, and I've just replayed it on the SNES.
I've been playing it on GOG, which is the remastered version from a few years ago. Quite a few years ago, actually. I think it's 2013.
2013, yeah, was the remake, just a bit of a zhuzh up version.
It is brilliant. I've got to tip my hat to it. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. It's got a Prince of Persia rewind time feature when you die.
Oh, yeah. Cheating.
Yeah, a bit of cheating, but if you've already played the game through 20 years ago and want to go back to it now, good way to experience it.
I think I died the most when I played for it beginning of this week from falling from two floors up.
Oh, really?
More than I died from anything else.
I didn't tend to have trouble with the platforming side of it. It was more the combat side of it that I died to a lot.
No, I'm not sure I died at all to the combat of it.
And that was literally only in the last section. So when you get to the alien planet, there's just like a switch.
Yep.
And it goes from very sort of linear, simple platforming, go here, go there, get this, get that, to just the difficulty just ramps up ridiculously. As soon as you get like a small area where you got to roll back and forth and shoot those blue pricks, it just becomes a nightmare for me.
That's what their actual name is.
Blue pricks. Yep. It's the Blue Man Prick Group.
By the time I'd got to that bit, it'd all come back to me.
Yeah.
And I was like rolling backwards and forwards, and I knew I had to wait for them and then roll away and turn. It was just sooner or later they fall into a pattern with each other. And it's
that's the thing. I knew that as soon as I saw them and thought, oh yeah, I know this plays out. But it's inconsistent. Sometimes you'll roll through them and past them.
Yeah.
Other times you'll just get hit.
Yeah, when they peer under you, it can be a bit flaky, but I think I went through a few disintegrator beams as well.
Mm.
But I don't think I died from getting shot. After when you first turn it on, you're like, I've forgotten how to play this. And you're like cack-handed and upside down and all sorts of. But after that, it was like running and being late for a jump and just falling to my death like some sort of spanner. Just ridiculous.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. It was good. It was really, really good to go back to because I haven't played it for years.
Did you finish it?
I came very, very close.
Well, you must have. If you got to the two blue guys, that's right near the end.
Yeah, I'm like sort of 5-10 minutes from the end.
Yeah.
And this is about sort of an hour ago. So I was like, no, I need to put that to one side, go get some beers.
If you're that close in, did you remember to leave the teleporter back up at the pad?
No, but I have watched a video of about the last 5 minutes being played. So I know to do that.
One of the things that's frustrated me is I have been telling people for probably over a decade that between getting home from school and my dinner being ready, I used to play through Flashback in 45 minutes in one go, no hits. And I absolutely played it through, no hits, no falling, beautifully smooth all the way through. The world record for a run on Flashback is an hour and a minute.
Wow.
So there's no way in the world I've done it in 45 minutes. So
no.
I must have been pretty close to have thought it was that quick. But because, and again, it was no deaths, not even getting hit as far as I can remember.
Mm.
All the nice smooth running. I love sliding off the edge of a platform. So you turn just too late, so
yes.
You could fall off and turn at the same time. It's so cool.
My favorite animation transition has got to be jumping off of something, landing, and have the gun drawn.
Yeah.
I love that one. And also climbing up onto something, and as you get up, you raise the gun. They're brilliant.
Going off the edge and landing in the crouch position with the gun out is just, it's the most gangster thing in all games ever. You can shove your Max Payne up your ass, but it's just so cool. Do you know what amazed me is that I beat Cyber Tower the first time I played it.
I beat Death Tower in one go.
It's always been Cybertower for me because I've always played the SNES version. I think I have it now on the Mega Drive. I don't think I actually played it because my Mega Drive is in storage.
How was the sound on the SNES version?
To be honest with you, I've never heard anything else. It sounds absolutely fine. I love it. I love the music. I think it's beautiful. The sound effects are sort of minimal. I adore it. It's funny, isn't it? Because there's a clear lineage from the likes of Prince and Persia and flashback to Tomb Raider. Early on in Tomb Raider, you start running down a corridor and the music comes in, doesn't it? And it's just one of the most brilliant moments in gaming. And I love that flashback doesn't have music all the way throughout on most versions. I think it does on a couple, but like the Sega CD or the 3DO or one of those things that's got a CD, it's got music all the way through.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that it just comes in every now and again on the SNES version, as I know it. Just a little chirpy background music and things, and you know there's something about their little clicky whir thing of their little robot with a zappy thing on top of it.
The little robot with the zappy thing on top of it.
That's the fella.
I know who you mean. Yeah, not sure that's what it's actually called.
I reckon it is. I tell you what, I swear to God, the story is apparently about a super spy secret agent gets his, sorry, everybody, spoilers, skip forward if you want to miss it. I don't know how long yet, but you know.
All you need to do is say, if you haven't played Flashback and you're listening to this, go away and play it. And here we go.
Dave makes a beautiful point. If you haven't played Flashback and you're listening to this, what the fuck are you doing with your life?
Yeah, it's only a few hours.
Why haven't you played Flashback? It's one of the greatest video games of all time. Mm. Go and play it right now. And now I've forgotten what I was actually saying.
The story is apparently...
Yeah, so it's apparently, you know...
What's
this
your source for this?
One of the manuals that this geezer on this other podcast was reading.
Because that's bullshit. The plot of the game is explained in the game. So, the guy writes a thesis... about measuring molecular density, which later is revealed to be a guy who's working for the aliens, plants that as a topic to be researched on a computer network. So he's not a spy at all.
No.
It's bollocks. Apparently there was a comic released with some of the physical versions. That may have, I don't know, messed around with it, changed it.
Well, I think there must have been a fair bit of retconning in various manuals and things, because that's all I've read and heard about, looking and listening and watching, reading retrospectives and all that, is how the secret agent, whatever his face is.
Conrad
B. Hart. I knew it was there somewhere. Going to be a reference to Hearts of Darkness, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Got to be.
I'll have to add that to my list of references that I wrote.
He's got a friend, I think, it might be in Fade to Black, because I don't remember seeing it in Flashback, and I've been playing a bit of Fade to Black. He's got a mate called John O'Connor. The Irish Terminator.
Oh, look. That's brilliant.
This story, that's what I mean. The story I've known is what it says on the SNES, which is I wrote a thesis, molecular density, then there's like aliens.
Yep.
Hiding amongst humans, and then he gets shot and disappeared to another planet. Do you know what I couldn't help but think? Austin Powers, where Dr. Evil's son's going, we'll just get a gun. We'll kill him now. We'll do it together. It'll be fun. Pow. I mean, why are you fucking bothering kidnapping him, wiping his brain, just shoot him in the face? End of problem. He's gone away now.
The thing is, though, I mean, at that point, you just think, it's mystery and intrigue and blah, blah, blah. But later in the game, you start reading that guy's diary.
Yeah.
They're going to wipe out the human race. What's one person? How does that matter? That guy's diary had me cracking. Yeah. It takes him like 3 months in between diary entries. Did he lose his diary for 3 months at a time?
Again, love it. And it's hard sometimes to laugh at things you love, isn't it? Because they're a bit, I don't know, a bit hackneyed. But that bit, like right at the end where he's got to put the explosive charge on the lift, and it's like a voice came into my head and said, place it here. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake, just put a fucking sign. You're not even trying now. You've got to the end and you're like, oh shit, how do you let them know that they've got to put it here? We've run out of graphic assets and the fucking memory's full.
Potentially an actual thing.
Well, it was. The Mega Drive version had... I think it was called a 12-bit cartridge, which was made by Delphine.
That'd be a megabit. That'd be a megabit. Yeah, 12 megabit cartridge.
That's what I meant.
Because do you remember that Mega Drive games of the time? and SNES games, presumably as well. We're like, oh, it's the first 16 megabit cartridge. It's the first 12, 24, whatever.
All Mega Drive cartridges are apparently 8. And Delphine cobbled together a 12 to fit the game on.
Really?
Yeah, they did it themselves.
Well, it was designed for the Mega Drive originally, wasn't it? Apparently. And then came out on the Amiga first, which I think is quite funny.
I mean, not by much.
Yeah, well, calendar year. I have a question for you. If you've been playing Fade to Black, what's Fade to Black about? And like, is it any good?
It's about being really fucking difficult.
Oh, okay.
Early 3D game. Mm-hmm. So 96, it came out on PlayStation, 95 on PC.
Mm-hmm.
It feels that old. It's got like that level of jank to it. It really is very
clunky.
Very, very clunky. The movement is okay. Camera angles are weird. Like when you pull your gun, you like half your screen is sort of the back of his head. Completely bizarre. And it's like you see like the half height of the room in front of you and then the floor and the back of his head. It's almost like they had to get in his head and the gun into shot somehow. So they basically lifted the camera angle up. It's very odd.
Okay. Was it some sort of weird attempt to do a first person view when nobody knew how to do a first person view?
Yeah. And it's like that thing now where when you do third person and close up, it's off to the side. But that was a fairly new thing, that view. And it's like that didn't exist. So they were trying to keep him in frame, but also not have his head get in the way. And it's just it's a very odd solution.
Mm.
It's not terrible. It's you know, functional, just about. It's got quick save on the PlayStation. It's got like a save anywhere quick save function, which I don't think I saw on many much newer PlayStation games than that. I say quick save, it does take quite a long time, but you can
but you can save anywhere.
You can save anywhere. You got 4 slots where you can save anywhere, which I tell you what, you just fuck it. If it was quicker, you'd be hammering it all the time. They probably deliberately slowed it down.
Is that one of those situations where you can save just before you die? And from that moment on, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The blue fuckers, who I think might be green in the...
Pricks. Blue pricks.
Sorry, the blue pricks might be green pricks in Fade to Black. I could be wrong. It's right behind me, actually. Yep, they're green. So they become green. And they're the same pricks. So the game starts. Basically, the end of Flashback is a knockoff from the end of Alien.
Yep. Number 4 on my references list.
Yeah, he gets into a cryogenic suspension thing and floats off into space, and really quite a cool piece of music kicks off as the credits roll up. And Fade to Black starts with him getting woken up after 50 years by the same aliens he's just escaped from.
50 years.
50 years.
It's a bit on the nose, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. They weren't mucking around.
Shouldn't it be 57 years? Is it 57?
You're probably a better man to say than I am.
I think I've got a feeling it's 57. That's the number in my head anyway.
So, yeah, and basically he gets recaptured by the same aliens that let him escape the first time, and they still don't just shoot him in the face. They lock him in a room.
With one inept guard.
Exactly. Exactly that. And so, yeah, you escape with the help of your mate John O'Connor.
It is 57 years.
Hey!
I've seen Aliens a few times.
They still haven't shot him in the face, so he gets up and escapes and starts killing him. It's, as I say, it's 3D. You walk around, you open doors. It would be good if it wasn't so brutally hard.
Yeah.
And I know it's said a lot about old games, but the aliens can literally appear underneath you and kill you instantly without you realizing they're there.
Oh, wow. So it's not like a just, you know, different time, different sensibilities, different design principles. It's just fucking hard.
It is just fucking hard, yeah. And it's like, that's how you would learn you don't just run into that corner of the room because an alien's going to appear. So it's basically almost like an area by area of room by room, like edging your way through everything. And it's all combat. The whole puzzle thing's completely gone. It's all just shooty, shooty.
That's a shame.
There's some sort of mazy type bits. And I mean, I'm saying this. I finished the first level. So it might be that later on in the game it comes from puzzle. But it's very much, it has the feel where they've lent heavy into the gunplay thing, which they did again on they've done recently on Flashback 2, leaned into the gunplay again.
Yeah, well, I was going to get to Flashback 2. Have you played that at all?
No, it's a Microids game. Do you know about Microids?
No, apparently it's awful.
Yeah, so Microids are a publisher, and what they seem to do is to go to developers and go, oh yeah, we'll give you the money to make your game, and you've got 6 months. And then in 5 months go, is it ready yet?
Oh, wow.
And then they put the game out whether it's ready or not. And if it's like a 2-hour side-scrolling game like Flashback 2, they charge £40 for it on Steam.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's like apparently it's buggy, unfinished, doesn't work, and is very much leaning into the shooty side of things again.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, it is. There's been a couple of attempts. So Fate of Black is the proper sequel. It's nothing like Flashback at all, other than the fact that, you know, you are Conrad B. Hart and you've still got your leather jacket on. I mean, that's got to be getting a bit pongy, isn't it, that jacket?
If he's been sleeping in it for 50 years, it's going to stink.
Jesus. No wonder they always know where he is and can just appear underneath him.
Yeah.
There's a very childish joke about Conrad B. Fart there, isn't there?
Oh, mate.
They had started making a different Flashback sequel on the Game Boy Advance, and that never got finished, but it got leaked a couple of years ago now. Time ceases to have any meaning once you get past 40, kids.
I'm just watching a very brief video of Flashback 2. It looks gorgeous.
Yeah, it's got that there was an Xbox 360 Metroidvania early on. Shadow Complex. There was this game Shadow Complex that came out on the 360. And the look of it reminds me of that with the 2.5D thing. And apparently. And it's one of those things where I'm always a bit reticent when people give games a bad review because they're buggy. I get it. It's annoying that you bought a game and it's buggy. Mm-hmm. That's fair. But it doesn't tell me a year down the line once a 6 patch has been released whether it's a good game or not.
Have you ever played Gang Beasts?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Gang Beasts is brilliant. It's one of the most fun multiplayer experiences I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
I've literally been in tears of laughter playing that game with people. But there are negative reviews on Steam that are basically to the line of, I don't have any friends and play this on my own, so I thought it was shit. Well, of course you did. You're not playing it properly. Get some friends, then play it again. One of the things that I really don't like in reviews in general is when people review the experience, not the game.
Yeah.
And it applies to anything. It applies to stuff on Amazon. It's like, oh, this got delivered a week late, so I'm giving it a bad review.
Yeah.
Okay, that doesn't tell me what the product's like, though. But that's part and parcel of modern games, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Comes out day one, you're going to review it. You're going to review it based on what you're given there. Well,
I mean, you have to. You've got to get it out as soon as possible to get them YouTube likes, haven't you? That's what it's all about, mate.
While we're on the subject, like and subscribe.
Yeah, we're on YouTube, kids.
Cocktail mode, like and subscribe.
Tell your friends, leave a comment.
Fuck it hell.
We always answer. But yeah, you were saying. So Fadeback is the proper sequel, and then there's a couple of remasters. It sounds like you played the good one, then there's a bad one. There's one called Flashback Legends, which was going to be on the Game Boy Advance.
Okay.
And the files got leaked a few years back, and that looks like it was going to be decent. The very much like Flashback, still side-on puzzle switches, platforming. Mm-hmm. It looks like they've just lifted and dropped the animation and the character, but it might have been a placeholder that could have changed in the future. It was very early doors. Lots of the levels aren't finished. But the graphics look really smart. It looks like the background art is mostly done, certainly for the first level.
Mm.
And it was well on its way. And then Delphine went bust and took it with them, unfortunately. But
that's a shame.
Yeah, and I think that would have been a good
one. I was thinking, actually, when I was playing Flashback earlier on, I thought, realistically, to make something like that today, like somebody with the obviously necessary skills could probably bash that out in about a day or two.
Okay, a game jam game. But it is one of those games that is elevated by its atmosphere, by its graphics and its music and its sound effects. But not all games get away with that. Sometimes games lean on it too much. But it's, as you mentioned, there's a lot of references in Flashback. It leans on a lot of things for its influences. And it kind of just gets away with it somehow.
The thing is, though, it's not like you watch it or you play it, rather, and you go, oh, that's a ripoff from Blade Runner. That's a ripoff from Total Recall. You sit there and go, oh, I like that. That's a Blade Runner reference.
Yeah. It's an homage.
Yeah. You accept it and you're happy about it rather than, oh, well, that's just a ripoff.
Yeah.
I mean, the four things that I wrote down as references for the game.
Yeah.
Blade Runner, just the visual style of the character, I thought was very much sort of Deckard. but also the cityscape when he goes flying through it is all kind of big pyramid looking buildings. Yeah. Total Recall, obviously, for the memory wiping and re-implanting and stuff. They live. Overall plot is basically the film They Live.
Right.
And then Alien at the end for the cryogenic sleep thing.
So you missed the most obvious one.
What's that?
Running Man.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Ah, shit.
And the entirety of the Cyber Tower.
Death Tower.
Cyber Tower.
Every time you say Cyber Tower, I'm going to edit myself saying death over the top of it.
I'm... you're ruining my innocence by telling me what the uncensored version was. But yeah, no, that's all I've got as well. I don't think there's anything else there. I mean, for as we were saying, as much as it's quite simple, there's little things that are really quite clever in it. Like after you think you've come away from the hostile planet surface, you sort of get away into the world, and then you enter a room and there's some of those sort of caveman type dudes like in there, and it's just like, oh shit, it's like I thought I was out of that. Bringing that world building into it, and I think world building is something the game does very well.
Yeah, with very little.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, it's not complicated, there's not a lot going on, but things like the mission where you have to run the errands, basically the job screens things, which apparently isn't very popular. I think it's cool because it's
world building. I love that bit. I thought that's great.
Yeah, it brings the world to life a bit, doesn't it? I think it's great. I really enjoy
it. Makes
it.
The most of those eight screens that make up the four areas of the city.
And you go hopping around on the underground trains.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't get the hate for that. I mean, the game gets a little bit of hate anyway for the same reason that Prince of Persia and Tomb Raider do, because people don't have brains and they want games to play themselves.
I was going
to
say, because people are shit at these games. I didn't complete it, so I don't like it.
The amount of stories I heard like on other people's podcasts and on YouTube videos about people who never completed the game because it was too hard.
I suppose if you borrowed it off somebody or you rented it and you only had it for a weekend.
Yeah.
Maybe. I'll give you that.
I mean, maybe.
If you owned it or you had it for anything more than a few days, you'd finish it.
It's not brutally hard, is it? There's a couple of sticky points, but it's not.
It does ramp up in that last section.
Yeah.
I'll give
and
you
there's that.
That
fucking door that I completely forgot about.
The one you shoot. I had to watch a fucking video to get me through that. At no point in the entire rest of the game do you shoot anything to do anything. The thing is, back in the day, I probably would have thought of doing that.
Yeah.
I probably thought, well, I've tried everything else. Maybe I'll shoot it. Because it used to be something you did in every game, wasn't it? If you had a gun, your only form of interaction in a lot of games is to shoot everything.
Absolutely. And I think it's one of those things that's just kind of drifted away on the sands of time. Back playing it in the day, I don't remember that being an issue, that section. Because what would have happened is would I have gone, well, I've got to get past it, and just started shooting everything. It would be everything would get shot, and then the door would open. You'd go, oh yeah, of course, shoot the door. It took me a while. I didn't remember straight away. I did a bit of backtracking, and I think it was about the third time I come back, and again, there's got to be something. Oh yeah, of course, you shoot the door. I do think that is a bit. It's a bit shitty design, isn't it? That there's one door in the entire game that you have to shoot.
Yeah,
it's just bizarre.
There's no reasoning behind it, and there's no precedent for it.
No, it's almost like they were playing it and they wanted the game to have a certain like cadence or pace, and they've gone, well, they've got through that bit a bit quick. Let's put something really fucking obnoxious in the way to slow them down.
What are your thoughts on Another World?
I'm not a big fan of Another World.
That doesn't surprise me. I don't know why, but tonally I think it's very different. If you're a big fan of Flashback, I don't think you'll be a big fan of Another World. It's kind of a one or the other situation, isn't it?
To me, I think I don't even think they feel that similar. To me, Another World reminds me more of like Dragon's Lair and Space Ace than it does a Flashback.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because there's that very insta-death, the very sort of surprise you out of nowhere, you have to absolutely 100% learn what's going to happen before it happens.
Yeah.
And I don't, Flashback isn't like that. Yeah, Flashback, you've got to obviously get to grips and understand that you need to stop a distance before the end of a ledge. But that comes very quickly. It certainly came back to me very quickly. It's not a difficult thing to learn.
The movement in that game is phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
One of the only things I really lament about the game is that it doesn't have many, or really in fact, any long sequences of like run, jump, roll, run. You kind of piece together some bits like that.
Yeah.
But there's no really long, continuous, like missed one of these jumps, one of these obstacles and you're fucked kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's about the only thing that I would say it's probably missing, because otherwise it's probably just about perfect.
It's one of those things I think when you see it now next to its contemporaries, it's almost hard to believe that it came out at the same time as some of these other games.
It's a masterpiece of design.
Yeah.
For the time, it is incredible.
It really, really is, yeah. And it's just, I think it's that, again, coming back to that whole world building thing, the fact that you start on that first level and it's all jungly and there's, you know, those sort of Cro-Magnon men with their big weapons. That sounded weird. and then not so long after that, you're doing Cyber Tower and how different that is. And then obviously I think towards the end, the alien planet does feel a bit like the first one again, but I quite like that, the way it wraps around.
I don't know. I really liked the transition from level to level. Feels like a genuine like change of place.
Mm.
The skin, the design that's there really sets them apart. I would say even the city bits, when you first get to wherever it is you go for the second bit, it's kind of it's all like above ground, kind of sunny.
New Washington.
Yeah, and it's nice. It's pleasant. Get attacked quite quickly, but, you know. And then when you move down into like the subway bits, it's kind of dark and dingy.
Yeah.
And very clearly underground. And that was really, really good. Now that I think about it, actually, it's kind of similar in a way to Fifth Element. Remember in Fifth Element, you've got like, yeah, the high-rise buildings are all kind of nice and there's flying cars all zipping around.
Yeah.
But then there's the dingy, shitty lower bit on the ground level where clearly nobody ever goes.
Talk about world building. That film is absolutely crawling with it, isn't it? It's incredible. I'd never forget, there's a bit where the geezer comes around and flamethrows the creatures off the wheels of the aircraft. It's like, for no good reason. Doesn't do anything. It's not a plot point or anything like that. It's just a little tiny bit of world building thrown in there. Yeah. It's absolutely brilliant. And I think, Flashback is full of little bits like that. It's also, I got to the end of the game with three exploding mice in my pocket. I wasn't just happy to see you.
That's one thing.
What are you supposed to do with them?
I was going to ask, what are the exploding mice for? I think I do know. There's a couple of bits where you have enemies behind a closed door, which you open off screen.
Right.
And I think the idea is to put them down there, run away, open that door, and then when you come back, they'll run onto the exploding mice. That's all I could think of, because I never used them.
No, I never used them either.
And I've thought about it. I thought, what are these for? Is there a specific puzzle or thing that I haven't thought of?
Yeah.
Because you can't, like, throw them over a ledge.
No.
Have you tried to use one on a very small platform?
It just turns around and...
you instantly explode. May as well strap a landmine to your face. Yeah, learn that lesson very quickly.
I had an extra key in my pocket at the end of the game as well.
Yep, I had that.
I'm not sure what that's about. It can't be a feature, can it? There's got to be a mistake.
But yeah, that confused the hell out of me.
Yeah, me too.
Because it was so far down in my list of items that I forgot I had it.
It's apparently the single good thing that the Jaguar version does over the other 16-bit version. Well, I say the other 16, it's a 32-bit version, but they didn't do anything to it. It's not upgraded at all, except for the fact it's got a long menu bar, so you don't have to scroll down at all.
Oh, okay. Wow.
That's it. That's what you've...
That's worth buying the Jaguar for, definitely.
Yeah.
So you can play Flashback with a longer inventory.
That's it. Save a bit of scrolling.
If only I'd known at the time, I might have bought one.
We haven't really talked about Prince of Persia.
No. And I did wonder if we get onto that or not, because it's not technically really related.
Unrelated.
It's similar.
Unrelated.
It is very, very similar. And looking at the broad spectrum of games of this type, it's very, very clearly similar technology, similar ideas, but earlier.
It was a fair bit earlier as well, wasn't it? The earliest versions, which I think was the Apple II, wasn't it?
1989, first version. I can remember playing it on, I think, the Amiga, possibly the ST.
I had it on the SNES. I wish I still had it on the SNES, because the SNES version is brilliant and is quite expensive now.
Yeah,
it's the same game, very sort of similar, but they just juiced up the graphics a bit and it looks really smart. They still didn't fix his weird gimpy run, though. he like, scuffs his feet,
that
doesn't he?
That weird, like, leaning that he does at the start. Yeah.
And he just seems to be, he doesn't seem to lift his feet off the floor. It's
well, he's barefoot, it's that... running through a fucking dungeon, mate. You've got to cut him some slack. But no, yeah, very tonally similar, level design, somewhat similar.
It's just that, the grid work, isn't it, is where the similarity is, and obviously it's there's no guns, and the sword fighting is, I still don't know how I won those sword fights, to be honest with you.
Repetition. Kind of, that's how you did anything.
Yeah, it was very much a platform game, puzzle platformer. And I don't think Flashback is a puzzle platformer. I think there's too much else going on. I mean, it got those elements in it, but I think it goes beyond that, I think, with the cinematics and with the gunplay that comes into it. And there's such a level of satisfaction with the whole basically shoot parry thing with the shield.
You know what, I use that literally like twice.
Really? Yeah,
I just forget it's there. I genuinely do.
One of the things I love about it is the sound of it. It's got a really cool sound on the SNES version. I don't know if it's the same on all of them or not. I think we probably have mentioned Tomb Raider every single episode, probably even crowbarred it into Street Fighter 2 somewhere. There's an interesting thing there, because it's what Flashback was doing, the whole grid-based system, taking that into 3D and making that work, and that taking that smoothness of animation and making it instant, obviously not instant, but immediate, and taking away quite a lot of that. It's even something as simple as having guns holstered and then unholstering them, that lineage of the two things together is great. And there's a really interesting thing there in that Fade to Black came out slightly before Tomb Raider. I think they were within 12 months of each other, very close. And I can imagine, I didn't play it at the time, Fade to Black, people probably thought this was a great thing to have on a home computer, this 3D action game. Okay, it was too hard, but I think it would have been quite impressive to have on a home computer at that time. Early doors of the PlayStation, coming off the back of the SNES and the Mega Drive. And then Tomb Raider comes out. Just flips the fucking table on everything. Yeah. I couldn't help but playing it, how much older it feels to play than Tomb Raider, how much more archaic.
Mm.
In the same way that Flashback feels so much newer than its contemporaries. In retrospect, Fade to Black next to Tomb Raider is just night and day. Just the speed, the accuracy, the movement, the animation. It's just, it's bonkers that they're two games that came out so close together.
The thing is, you haven't even got the excuse of much more development time or experience, because I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure, is it Crystal Dynamics or Core who did Tomb Raider?
Core were first, yeah.
Pretty sure they hadn't done anything else before, so they didn't have pedigree, they didn't have pre-existing games in a series or anything that they could work from. And certainly back in the early 90s, when these games were being made, you made your own engine. You didn't license one from anybody else. So I guess it comes down to talent, individual talent on the team.
It's an approach, isn't it? You take something as simple as difference between Tomb Raider and Fade to Black, which I appreciate you haven't really seen, but it's that kind of the closeness and the movement of, and we're going to focus on shooting the aliens, and that's kind of the product that they went to make. Whereas Tomb Raider was very much, it felt for the first time to me like you were free in a 3D environment.
Yeah.
And even going back and playing Fade to Black now, it doesn't quite feel like that. It's very much sort of corridors and restrictions, and not quite walking in a straight line when you want to. And I know lots of people feel the same way I feel about Tomb Raider, about Mario 64, that it had the first time they spent free to maneuver within a 3D environment.
It's quite often cited as like the first really, really good 3D game.
Yeah.
Which it wasn't.
No, of course it wasn't. iRobot was.
What was that?
iRobot was.
iRobot.
It's on my main
list. I was going to say, it's a main game, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've played it.
No, it's a brilliant game. Phil Polygon's like really remarkably early for what it was. Quite a basic game. Basically similar to the kids' playground game where you have to sneak up on the person and they're a wolf or something. What was that? What's the time, Mr. Wolf? The proper kids, when you're like, you're in the playground and you have to sneak, and if they see you moving, if they turn around and they see you moving.
Such a departure. What the fuck are you talking about? Yeah.
It's not What's the Time, Mr. Wolf.
No, I know. I don't know. I can't remember.
Basically, iRobot is the video game of that. There's a polygonal eye in the distance and you have to make your way to the front of an area.
Sounds like Sentinel.
Yeah, I've never played Sentinel.
Oh, Sentinel's brilliant. There was a really, really good version on the PlayStation called Sentinel Returns.
Oh, yeah.
One of the very few games that used the mouse, the PlayStation mouse. What is the music like in the SNES version?
Oh, it's incidental. The word that we were looking for earlier is
like
incidental.
Small snippets of music rather than like long stretches of sweeping orchestral scores.
Yeah, exactly that. So it's not, and it's very sort of electronica, that kind of Blade Runner-y, not quite Vangelis-y, but that sort of vibe.
That's the sort of nods to Blade Runner that I took away from it, was the music is very Vangelis-like. But I think that's a good thing. It's not immediately a rip-off of anything.
No.
It's got that sort of feel to it. It's got that place, that essence to it where you think, oh yeah, it's kind of synthy, it's gritty, future noir-ish.
Yeah, absolutely right. There are chunks where it has taken homage to perhaps the borderlines of rip-off.
Mm.
I mean, particularly Cyber Tower.
Death Tower.
that is you know, there's nothing subtle about that. Is there?
Yeah.
It gets away with it, and it, because it's like a loving homage. It's like it's clearly done with feeling, and not just, it's not done in a cynical Tarantino type way, and it's not done in a looking down its nosy jokey sort of a way. It's kind of a clearly done with love for those things and brought them into it.
I don't know much about the sort of writing process for music in games, especially in Paris in the early 90s. I can well imagine that somebody went to whoever was doing the music and said, okay, this is the general idea of the game.
Yeah.
These are sort of the bits we want you to do. Go nuts. Yeah. Watch Blade Runner a few times.
Yeah.
And yeah, come up with some music that doesn't sound like it infringes copyright.
I wouldn't be in the slightest bit
How
surprised.
Else would you pitch that? How else would you say to somebody?
No.
Unless it's somebody like deeply involved within the game who can go off and write the music and record it and add it in and whatever.
I mean, it was looking at the credits at the end. It did seem to be made by about six people. The same names kept on coming up every screen for different bits and bobs. So I think it was definitely a small unit.
Mm.
Did you know... I'd never heard this story before, but apparently the publishers, they wanted him to do a Godfather game.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so they went and Paul Quiso is basically like the Godfather in space. What do you think of that idea? And they were like, no, but we like what you're doing, so you carry on. You keep going. but no, you are not doing the Godfather in space, you crazy French fuck.
That'd be brilliant.
Just incredible.
I mean, to be fair, you could very, very easily tie that into the Star Wars universe. Because you've got Jabba the Hutt is basically an organised crime lord.
Yes, he is.
Get in touch with Lucasfilm. Get the licence.
Oh, you've just reminded me. Ewan McGregor was on stage when we saw him on the Jonathan Ross Show, and he was telling a story about filming one of the Star Wars prequels.
Mm.
And it was hilarious, right? It was genuinely funny where he's talking about filming on a blue screen and it's basically there's nothing.
Yeah.
He's got to sit on this creature and ride it off, and it's a box that he's got to sit on stage and pretend he's riding off on this box. And George Lucas is there going, look at the moons. And Ewan McGregor's like flicking his head around going, I don't know where these fucking moons are supposed to be. And it was really funny, but at the same time, there's part of me that just goes, that's really quite sad. It's that, you know, somebody has got this much money and this much influence to make a film, and they clearly haven't got a fucking clue what they're doing.
Yeah, it's a depressing thought, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just...
When the Lord of the Rings films were being made, Ian McKellen, because of the whole, like, you know, height difference of all the actors thing, had to do a lot of his filming on his own. And then be sort of digitally inserted into a scene with everybody else so that the heights all worked out.
Yeah.
And he came away from the experience depressed, like he was going to quit acting. The experience was so opposed to what acting should be. Like, you should be face to face with another actor, developing the scene, making it into what it becomes and all that. And he had none of it. And he hated the process so much, he was just going to walk away.
There was a story in Patrick Stewart's autobiography, which I recommend. It's a good book. But he tells a story there. And for the life of me, I can't think who it is now, which makes it a slightly less good story. But when he was a young actor, he was acting in somebody who was off screen. And the director or the second unit director said to this the more famous person in the scene, you can go now, we'll finish with Patrick on his own. And this guy just kicked off. He just went, no, I am not fucking going anywhere. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to act this scene properly because that's what actors do. And I thought it was great. I wish I could remember who that was so they could get the credit for it.
Well, you ever heard about when they first started filming Next Generation?
He was a prick.
Yeah, well, no, not that he was. Well, he was a prick.
Yeah.
By his own admission, but
yeah,
he did. He was like the only serious person on set. Yeah. Everybody else was just taking a piss. Thought it would last like a week.
Yeah.
And it was just a paycheck. They didn't care.
Yeah.
And he was deadly serious. I was like, no, fucking, put some effort into it. Stop pissing about. Let's make a good thing, which I think works well for the character.
Yeah. I mean, two things. That story about that is in the book. You should definitely read the book generally. It's a very interesting. Everyone go away and read Patrick Stewart's autobiography. It's very good.
What's it called? Please tell me it's called Engage or Make It So, surely. Yeah! There we go. For those not watching, which is everybody. Andy, the godfather of podcasts, has just held up a book called Making It So by Patrick Stewart. We're not a visual format.
No, we are not. However, what I would like to say about Patrick Stewart's autobiography is as much as it is called Making It So, you do not have to be a Star Wars fan. Star Wars fan. You definitely don't have to be a Star Wars fan to enjoy it.
Maybe being a Star Wars fan is a better thing.
Maybe. But you don't have to be a Star Trek fan. There is, early on in the book, when he's telling stories about a air dive, he does. It's got the sense that perhaps a publisher has crowbarred in some sort of moments and stories from later on in his life that are to do with Star Wars into the early parts.
You mean Star Trek?
Yes. I do. Fuck's sake. I don't even like Star Wars.
Which means you should get the Star Trek bit right.
I'm not a big fan of Star Trek either. I think that's part of the problem. For me, let me just finish my thought. But yeah, generally speaking, I'm honestly, I like the stuff from Star Wars that's good, and I don't like the stuff from Star Wars that's bad. And I'm exactly the same with Star Trek. I'd like the Star Trek that's good. I don't like the Star Trek that's bad. And I don't get uppity about it. I don't say, oh no, there's only actually really three Star Wars films, the rest are rubbish, and there's only the even numbered Star Trek films are good. It's nonsense. The good stuff's good, the bad stuff's bad. And if you want to get your knickers in a twist about something, then you should probably go and protest about the war in Palestine. But stop getting so fucking angry about TV shows and movies. Here endeth the lesson.
Oh, I've just found that Jaguar podcast you were looking for, by the way. It's jaguar.gamebygamepodcast.com.
That guy, has it got his name on it or anything, or is it just that?
Yes, it does. It is Shinto.
Shinto, that's him. Cheers, mate, for that story about the Godfather that I nicked from your podcast. Much appreciated. And your podcast in general, there's a couple of times in my life now I've stumbled across that and give it a listen. So, and that was a while ago for you now, but thanks for your input. Talk to me about your cocktail for this week, David.
David, fucking hell. I think that might be the first time you've ever called me David. My cocktail for this week is the Total Recall.
Hey, that's a cool one.
As my role on the show is usually to find the pun.
Yeah.
I've definitely found one because, like I said before, references within Flashback are very much Philip K. Dick, 80s sci-fi films.
Yeah.
Total Recall is very much a reference in there with the whole downloading your memory, sending it to your mate whose name is Ian, which I loved. I love the fact that his mate is called Ian. I can only presume that to a French developer, Ian is an exotic name. And I like to think that they were preempting the fact that eons are set to go extinct.
They are. There's not. It was a year recently where there were none, wasn't there? No eons.
So I want to bring back Ian as a thing.
Please, listeners, if you or your partner are pregnant, please, could you please christen them Ian Cocktail Mode and then your surname?
Well, not necessarily christen, because that's, you're going down a single route with that.
That's a
name them
very
Ian.
Very aware, very unlike you, Dave. I know. It's normally up to me to bring us back from the precipice of...
Because I really, really feel strongly for Ian's. So anyway, the total recall is 22.5 millilitres of tequila.
Nice.
22.5 millilitres of gold rum.
Ooh.
22.5 millilitres of Southern USA style liqueur. Southern Comfort. Thing is, it even says on Difford's EG Southern Comfort, just put fucking Southern Comfort.
Well, I think what happened is he clearly gets a lot of money by people sponsoring the particular drink. So rather than just say gin or white rum, it says a particular gin and a white rum because he gets money out of it, and God bless him.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know where that sponsorship money would go to nicely? A podcast that constantly references his website. 45 millilitres of cranberry juice, 45 millilitres of orange juice, 22.5 millilitres of lime juice.
Crikey.
I'm looking at this thinking tequila, rum, Southern Comfort, kind of sweet, and then cranberry juice, kind of, not bitter, but dry, isn't it?
Dry, yeah.
Orange juice, bit zesty, lime juice, quite zesty, but less of it. I think that's going to be quite a nice drink.
I think they're very refreshing.
Served in a Collins glass with a lime wedge. I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
I am definitely going to go out, buy all the ingredients for that, give that a go.
Does our friend and yours, Mr. Difford, say anything about it?
It's a 3.5 out of 5 from him.
Oh.
And he says, it's a very short review, a long burgundy-coloured drink with a taste reminiscent of blood orange. It's quite boozy. 2.7 units of alcohol.
That's good going. Well, I'm with you. I think that sounds quite nice. Quite nice on a summer's day.
Yeah.
Don't quite understand what it's got to do with Total Recall.
No, not a fucking clue. Don't care. Maybe if you drink it, you'll find out. You wake up and your name's Doug Quaid.
Superb film, that.
Oh, fucking brilliant. So tell me about your drink.
So I'm going to tell you about this thing I found not on Difford's Guide, interesting enough. So when Blade Runner 2049 came out, which I haven't seen,
it's quite good.
It's quite long, but yeah, no, I do want to see it. I've got nothing against it. Again, it comes back to this conversation. I don't think that somehow there being a sequel is going to reach into the past and turn Blade Runner into a bad film.
No.
Yeah. So when that came out, Johnny Walker, who basically got the whiskey license for the film, so in Blade Runner 2049, Deckard or other characters are drinking Johnny Walker Black Label, which is just a blended Scotch whiskey. There's nothing fancy about it. It's just it's a brand. I think actually Black Label might be single malt, but I don't know for certain.
It's in a more expensive bottle.
Yes. And they come up with, they got some sort of dine. And again, as much as not usually a fan of product placement, getting snippy about product placement in a Blade Runner film is not really a good, that's not a good hill to die on, is it? You're not going to do well on that. Yeah, so they got a whole bunch of very cool, very like genuinely, both up and coming and some of the best bartenders in the world to come up with drinks to celebrate the arrival of Blade Runner 2049. And there are, I think, 7 or 8 of them. I don't have the ingredients to make any of them. So I did have, fortunately, the ingredients bar matcha tea, which I went to Waitrose and bought for the drink called the Deckard, which is the top of the list by a mixologist called Ezra Starr. He's a woman who grew up in Venezuela and now has a bar in Hong Kong. And sounds like a very, very cool human being. Having discovered this cocktail and looked into her and her work, is now one of my favourite human beings on the planet. She just seems to be very cool and very interesting human being, making very interesting cocktails. And this is genuinely one of the most unusual things I've ever put in my mouth. So I just realised how that was going to sound as I was saying it.
That's a long and distinguished list.
So, your ingredients, if you want to make the Deckard at home, is an ounce and a half of Johnny Walker Black Label whiskey of any sort, half an ounce of fresh lime juice, 3/4 ounce of simple syrup, 2 ounces of fresh pineapple juice, wait to the end, Dave, a teaspoon of matcha powder, garnished with star anise and purple flowers. I know you don't like fruit and whiskey, Dave.
No, just the second you said whiskey, I was kind of checked out.
Yeah, no, I think this is not one for you.
I might be fine with it, but just when you list the ingredients and it starts with whiskey and then adds fruit, I just think no.
The interesting thing with it, as a drink, is that the whiskey is very much a background flavor. I think because matcha is so strong as a flavor, and it's the first sip I had of the Deckard, which is the color of.
It looked like a kale smoothie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's completely smooth, and it's just the most unusual thing. The depth and that weird sort of tea/grassy flavour of matcha, and then pineapple bouncing off it, and then a little bit of lime juice in the background. It's just the weirdest thing, but I've had two now. I think I've probably got enough matcha powder to make two more, and I'm going to, because it is one of those things, and it comes across as like a proper sophisticated cocktail, which is very much not me, obviously, but it's just,
I wasn't going to cast aspersions.
But I think it's got that, you know, those, the big in Blade Runner, the big neon and video screens and signs, and they're quite often. Yep.
Whole side of a building kind of thing.
Yeah, Japanese and Asian women and things like that. The look of it with the star anise and the purple flowers and the glasses put it in, which is called a coupette, which is basically a small coupe glass, like short stem.
Okay, yep.
It's got that vibe about it. It really does, and it's got that. I'm talking about Blade Runner and not flashback, but much as you did.
No, but it's tone, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Again, we come back to the references. It wears its references on its sleeve.
Yeah. No, without a shadow of a doubt. So, yeah, basically, if you want to try and make yourself a Deckard, which I thoroughly recommend because it is very, very lovely. I say, ounce and a half Johnny Walker Black Label, half ounce fresh lime juice, 3/4 ounce simple syrup, 2 ounces of fresh pineapple juice, and a teaspoon. I did a little bit less for my second one. It was a bit nicer with a little bit less matcha powder. Basically shove it all in a cocktail shaker, give it a shake till your arms hurt, fine strain it out, make sure you do fine strain it because the matcha can get a bit lumpy if you don't. Shove some star anise on top of it with some purple flowers out your garden, it looks the absolute business, and it's utterly delicious.
Did you just happen to have star anise to hand?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you not celebrate Christmas in your house, mate? What's wrong with you?
Not in April, no. Kind of ended 4 months ago for me. What about you?
Have you met my wife, mate? Christmas never ends. Yeah, all these cocktails. I'm going to read you a couple of these others. They're a bit bonkers. So the next one down is called Ode to Dreams. You know, you talk about how you don't have the ingredients for cocktails and you need to stock up.
So Generally speaking,
while you're doing your stocking up, get yourself some wildflower vermouth, some activated charcoal chili syrup, and some citrus cordial.
Am I going to use that often?
Oh, and some Sancho peppercorn oil for garnish.
Oh, no, I've already got that.
That's called the Ode to Dreams. Penicillin 2049.
What?
So penicillin is a cocktail.
What's a penicillin?
Do you know what? I don't know what's in an actual penicillin. I think it might just be whiskey and lemon juice.
Really? I've never heard of it.
I'll let you diff at it.
Scotch whiskey, ginger liqueur, lemon juice, honey syrup.
Yeah. So this is basically what this is. So this, created by Tenzin Samdo, is Johnny Walker Black, clarified lemon juice, honey syrup, and ginger flavour sensory cloud for garnish.
Say those four words again.
Sensory cloud garnish featuring a ginger flavour made using a LaWaf, a sensory cloud carafe. LaWaf uses ultrasound to generate droplets that float over your favourite beverage.
Oh, this, you've lost me. I'm gone.
Droplets settle into a glass and create a culinary sensation. And I thought fucking matcha tea was out there.
You're into the whole like artisan realm of cocktails. I'm just,
I think there's a bit of that, and
I love it. I love the theatrics. Yeah. And if I was in a really like, you know, good cocktail bar and I wanted the theatrics and all that kind of stuff, by all means. But yeah, I'm not doing that at home.
No, of course you're not. No, but I think there's something to be said as well for this is obviously tied in with the film and they're trying to create that kind of vibe as well. Yeah. And you can imagine if you went to an event and it was like that, we would all be all over it and we'd just be, this is fucking nuts.
I'd fucking love it. I'd be going back to the bar every 5 minutes asking for another one just to watch the guy make it.
Yeah.
Because I do love it. I love the experience of standing there watching somebody make your cocktail. I do love that. I just don't do it at home. I mean, I'm even lazy when it comes to a White Russian, for fuck's sake. Like, I know it needs ice, but I'm just going to put more milk in than normal.
I wanted to, the one that I was a bit disappointed with not being able to make was the Tears in Rain. That's a great name for a cocktail, right?
That is a good name for a cocktail.
And this is also by Ezra Starr. So the Johnny Walker lemon juice simple syrup, but black pepper and pear syrup, which I don't know where you get from, but quite a lot of these people.
Waitrose. Pretty sure it's in the black pepper and pear syrup aisle.
I imagine it's made. And that's it. And other than that, it's garnish and soda water. So that actually sounds quite nice. Not for you because you don't like whiskey, but whiskey, lemon juice, simple syrup. I think we've done quite well. Those are two.
I think we've covered some bases. Yeah.
I think that we've got some good cocktails there. We're a bit more invention than last week's Jaeger bomb from me. What are we doing next week, mate?
Let's do Resident Evil.
Oh, you've been wanting to do Resident Evil, haven't you?
Resident Evil has been in my mind every time we've mentioned the PlayStation. As soon as you say the words PlayStation, I just think Resident Evil.
There's a caveat. I wouldn't allow, we will do Resident Evil.
Mm.
We are not allowed to have a cocktail with the word zombie in it.
Okay, I'm fine with that. I'm absolutely fine with that. I do like a zombie, but it's too easy.
Yeah.
This has come up in conversation already. As soon as I describe this podcast to anybody, they're like, oh, you should do Resident Evil and do a zombie. You're like, we could do an episode about each Resident Evil game quite easily and do like 10 in a row.
3 might be interesting because I never finished it because I thought it was shit.
I've got it. I don't think I've ever played it.
It's one of those times where the preceding game was so good that I think it cast a bit of a long shadow. I probably didn't give it a fair shake because I started playing it and it didn't click with me the way 2 had.
Yeah.
And so I probably never give it a fair shake. It didn't land a punch on me. It didn't make me want to play it more. And I've said this a million times before and I will continue to say it. It is not my job to keep playing a game I'm not enjoying.
No.
It is the game's job to keep me entertained enough to want to keep playing it.
Yeah.
I think we are probably both in the tiny minority of people who didn't fall in love with Resident Evil 4.
I hate it.
That's got to be saved for next week. 5, I didn't hate as much as everybody else, but I did play it exclusively in co-op, which fixes a lot of its problems.
Mm-hmm.
6 was an absolute shit show. I've not played any since.
There's like various others in between all that as well.
Yeah, there's all the spin-offs.
I just thought we also get to talk about the great films. I've seen all of them.
Oh my goodness. I'm going to look forward to talking about those.
It won't take long. Trust me.
So please come and see us again where we will talk about next time about obviously Resident Evil 1 and 2 and a few of the others along the way as well. But I imagine we'll be focused mostly on 1 and 2.
I think we were going to say, is it time for a piss break?
Maybe for you. My bladder is strong like a tree.